You are in the Senate Education and General Government Committee. We start out with a little humor this morning. Welcome. Today is Tuesday, May 29th. We're happy to have you here. This is our last week, so we only have two more meetings to do damage or good, however you may perceive what we do here. If you have a cell phone, please turn it off so we don't hear it. We haven't collected anything on the Common School Fund for a little while, so we're shopping here. And sign-up sheets are over there. We're going to start out with our...
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Before we start, I would like to acknowledge for the record that today the chair is halfway to 102. And she looks very lovely in pink, and I just wanted to acknowledge the fact that it's a very special day for the chair.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. And I do like being halfway to 102. It makes me feel much wiser than just saying I'm only 51.
Take an ice cream today?
I don't know. That figure needs to stay pretty trim. But anyway, let's move on, and thank you. We'll open a public hearing on HJM 13A. This will be our last memorial in this committee, colleagues, I promise.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Joint Memorial 13A urges the President of the United States, the United States Congress, and the United States Trade Representative to negotiate a free trade agreement with Taiwan.
All right. Representative Lim.
Thank you.
Good morning, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. And for the record, my name is John Lim, State Representative from District 50, which is Gresham area. I hope you had a wonderful long weekend, and to me it was just not long enough.
Representative, I think we would all agree with you. I know I tried to sleep a lot.
Okay. Am I here that the chair, Madam Chair, you are 51? Did you say?
I am 51 years old today.
51,
yes.
I'm 72, you are 71, you are just 20 years behind me. Many minds are still going strong.
Well, good. I look forward to that age, but not just yet. Thank you.
And Madam Chair, thank you very much for hearing HJM 13A. And then I'm sure that I'm hoping and I'm sure this is the last memorial you are going to hear. And HJM 13 is very important. And Taiwan is our eighth largest trading partner with almost $900 million in 2006. Taiwan has been an ally in the past and will be so continually in the future. This memorial, HJM 13, is not a mandate. It is a simply urge to encourage the President and Ambassador and Congress to pursue negotiation and toward a free trade agreement. FTA has been negotiated and settled with South Korea about 2 months ago. It is awaiting an action by Congress. I believe we need to spur relationship with more than one Asian country, which is Taiwan, could be a good ally in terms of politics and trade in many areas. By passing this memorial, Oregon will be viewed as a leader and an ally in this effort. I do appreciate it and encourage the pass of this memorial. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Lim. Any questions this morning? Well, I think you took care of that pretty quick and
thank you
very,
very
thoroughly.
Much.
Thank you so much.
God bless each one of you.
We'll close the public hearing. Oops. Did you have a question?
No, I didn't. I just wanted to make a statement.
Okay. We're going to open a work session, and you can make your statement.
Just by way of disclosure, I have my daughter and family live in Taichung, Taiwan, and have considerable economic interests in Taiwan's economy. So I just wanted to make that disclosure. Sure.
Okay, that's so noted for the record, and I guess that's another reason why we need this memorial to continue the economic development we have.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
I move HJM 13A engrossed to the Senate floor with a recommendation that it be adopted.
Senator Cruz moves HJM 13A to the Senate floor with a recommendation that it be adopted. Any discussion? Nope. Hearing none. Oh, this is our vote. I'm going to so order this one, so you guys can vote in a minute. Who wants to carry that?
I'll carry that, Madam Chair.
Senator Wesson, it's yours. Okay. Open a work session on House Bill 2950.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2950 requires court commissioners to complete a one-day public management training course prior to taking the oath of office. We heard it earlier this month.
Okay. We did hear that earlier this month. I held on to it for a while, just sort of thinking about it. Brought it back, and let's see what that we're in work session. So any committee discussion on this bill? Do you want to move it first?
Madam Chair, I'll make the motion
okay.
first. Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2950 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves House Bill 2950 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Now, do you want to speak to your motion?
Yeah, well, Madam Chair, I'm just not quite sure why we're embedding something in statute that could be done without statute. Just a concern. I don't think there's necessarily anything wrong with training, and I do know that there have been some issues in some ports in the last couple of years, but when you embed things in statute, sometimes you take away flexibility.
Okay. I know I had a conversation with Senator Johnson. They're putting a budget note in the Oregon Economic Community Development Department budget to look at ports and port mergers. I asked her to put in, as part of that discussion, the issue of governance, because I think all ports should be elected instead of appointed. So she said she would add that to the list. And I don't know. Other than that, I didn't have much more to comment. Okay. Great. Then, Heather, do you want to take the roll?
No.
No.
Oh.
Aye.
This is a surprise.
And you get to carry it.
No, he doesn't really like it.
I don't really like it. I'm going to vote no.
Okay.
Chair Walker?
Aye. The bill fails. Close work session. Okay. Well, I don't think we've had that happen this session. All right. Let's see, we're going to hold over, for those of you here on House Bill 3339, we're going to hold that over until Thursday because we don't have enough to do on Thursday. I just think there's some more discussion. So if you're here for that, you can go have coffee or breakfast. Our next bill...
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Not you. And we have the amendment on 2021. Okay, I'll open a work session on House Bill 2021.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2021A specifies that projects regulated under the Federal Davis-Bacon Act are exempt from certain statutes relating to the prevailing wage rate, except for statutes relating to the applicability of state and federal prevailing wage rates. It requires for public contracts subject to both state and federal prevailing wage rates that contractors and subcontractors pay at least the state prevailing wage rate if the state prevailing wage rate is higher than the federal prevailing wage rate. It makes public agencies liable for workers' unpaid wages, fringe benefits, and liquidated damages when a public agency fails to include certain information on prevailing rates of wage and specifications for a public works contract. When we last heard this bill, we had before us -A4 amendments that required the Bureau of Labor and Industries to adopt a plan to increase diversity amongst workers employed on public projects. We had the -A5s. that delay exemptions from the prevailing wage rate statutes, those projects that are regulated by the Federal Davis-Bacon Act, require the commissioner of BOLI to determine whether the workers transporting materials and supplies to and from a project site are subject to the Davis-Bacon Act and entitled to the prevailing wage rate. And it specified a range of applicable fees. The A6s that are also before us today carry forward all of what you saw in A4 and all of what you saw in A5, but they specify the responsibility for and the timeliness of fee payment, which we heard last time was needed to make the bill as good as it could be.
We did hear that discussion. Is there anyone that needs a further explanation on that? Okay. And Ms. Hunt, if you're listening, we're going to take up 2263 next. Okay, then we're good to go. I'll take a motion on that.
So you want the fours and fives?
Sixes, just the sixes.
Just the sixes, okay. Madam Chair, I move the dash A6 amendment to House Bill 2021.
Senator Cruz moves the dash 6 amendment to House Bill 2021. Any discussion? So they can all agree. Hearing none. Ms. Gravel, you want to take the roll?
Well, no, we just...
I'm sorry. Adopted.
Good.
Yeah, that's because I'm thinking about other things today.
That's true. Okay, Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2021 engrossed as amended to the Senate floor with the due pass recommendation.
All right, now we're rocking and rolling. Senator Cruz moves House Bill 2021A as amended to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Okay, Ms. Gravel, now you can do your thing.
Senator
Aye.
Senator
Aye.
Senator
Aye.
Vice Chair Cruz?
No.
Surprises all over the place.
No, no, but
I
back for more. You know, you got on the wrong side of the bed.
House Bill 2021 is adopted, and I guess I won't be asking Senator Cruz to carry that.
Yeah.
Senator Morris or Senator Metzger? Senator Morris, thank you.
No, the problem is I got out of bed this morning.
Okay, so we're going to open a
work session
on House Bill 2263A, and we had to bring that back.
Oh, we need to.
Because we had a little problem. So, Senator Cruz?
Madam Chair, I move the rules be suspended, and we reconsider the vote by which we send House Bill 2263A to the Senate floor.
Senator Cruz moves that we reconsider the vote by which we moved House Bill 2263A to the Senate floor.
Madam Chair, if I may, I believe that we suspend the rules separately from reconsidering.
Right.
Okay.
Well,
the motion to suspend the rules, I believe, is separate from the reconsideration of the bill.
Right.
Yeah,
the motion was to suspend the rules for the purpose of reconsidering the vote.
Sorry.
So, do I have any objection to reconsidering the rules? Okay. So,
Madam Chair, I move we reconsider the vote by which Senate Bill 2263A was sent to the floor with a due pass as amended recommendation.
I need to cheat that one.
Right there.
Senator Cruz moves we reconsider the vote by which House Bill 2263A was sent to the floor with a due pass as amended recommendation. Any objection? Hearing none, so ordered.
Okay, so we now have a live bill.
Now we have a live bill, and oh, do we. this one's fun. Ms. Hunt, do you want to come up and explain,
let me do a quick recap.
Yeah, Ms. Richardson, why don't you recap it, and then we've got Ms. Hunt here to explain some things.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2263A abolishes the SIM and CAM. That's kind of the title. And when we last heard it, we adopted three sets of amendments, the dash A7s that allow school districts to prepare budgets annually or biannually, the dash A8s that directed the Department of Education to contract with a nonprofit entity to administer nationally normed assessments to all grade 10 students, and the dash A9s that added elements to local districts' continuous improvement plans, requires the superintendent to assign school ratings, and changes elements of the Oregon report card. So that's what we did last time. Today we have -A11s, -A12s, and -A13s before us, and Cindy can probably speak to those as well as anyone.
Okay, great. Well, I had my file all organized, and then I was in it about midnight last night and got all discombobulated. Maybe I can find what I'm looking for. Oh, there it is. So we adopted the A7s and the A9s.
And the A8s.
And the A8s.
Right.
And Ms. Hunt, I know that there was a problem with the A8s.
Madam Chair, first, yes. Cindy, what we're looking at with the 11s, 12s, and 13s is on the amended bill, so we don't have to go back and relook at the amendments already adopted. Is that correct?
Cindy Hunt, Senior Deputy Legislative Counsel. Chair Walker, Senator Cruz, the 11s and 12s would be a replacement for the A8s.
But we wouldn't have to remove the 8s. We can just, do we need to?
I would suggest that you do remove the 8s.
Okay.
Madam Chair, in speaking with Judy Hall, she suggested that we just place over or kind of cancel out the A8s with whatever the committee chose.
Well, it'd be simple to remove them. Just
okay. Do you want to just do that right now?
Yeah, Madam Chair, I move. Let's see. We got to suspend the rules to do this, don't we?
Well, we already suspended.
We're in
the
work
rules.
Session.
Yeah.
Madam Chair, I move we reconsider the vote by which we adopted the A8 amendment to House Bill 2263A.
Senator Cruz moves that we reconsider the vote by which we adopted the -8 amendments to House Bill 2263A. Any objection? So ordered.
Madam Chair, as I was the maker of the motion, I remove the motion.
You withdraw.
I withdraw the motion on the A8 amendment.
Okay. So we don't need to vote on that.
No, we put it back in play, and I made the motion, so I just removed the motion. So.
Fascinating exercises in parliamentary procedure this morning. Okay, so the A8s are gone, so we're done with those. So now, Ms. Hunt, what replaces those? We have a couple of options,
I think. Thank you. Chair Walker, you have two options in front of you, the A11s and the A12s. The A11s are almost identical to the A8s. The only difference is that they remove, I think it's one paragraph of the A8s. And
yes.
The paragraph that they remove is dealing with the type of assessment that the contractor would provide, and so they no longer require it to allow students entry into the candidate pool for national merit scholarships. Other than that, the A11s still direct the department to contract with a nonprofit entity to administer a nationally normed assessment and go into the requirements of that, and then they also pay for that by each fiscal year, allowing the department to expend up to $550,000 from the state school fund from the amount that would normally go to education service districts. So that's basically it, and so it's very close to the A8s. The A12s are somewhat different. They are also a replacement for the A8s and originally based on that, but what they do is they direct the Department of Ed to establish a list of nonprofit entities that'd be able to administer a nationally normed assessment in grades 9 or 10. And then a school district could pick from that list a test provider, and then the school district would pay for that exam. And if they did that, then the department would reimburse the school district $5 for each student who took the assessment. Also under the A12s, the money still comes from the state school fund, but it's now $250,000 per fiscal year. And there's also a reduced number of requirements placed on these nonprofit entities that would provide the test. So presumably it would let in basically more entities. And I know the lobbyists that asked for each of these amendments are sitting behind me, and I'm sure would love to answer questions about them.
Okay. Well, thank you. I don't know that we need to do that, but let me ask the committee. The -8 had that one sentence in there that was allows students entry into the candidate pool for National Merit Scholarships. That did not meet the approval of the House Education Chair and some of the members of the committee, so he came over and asked if I would take that one sentence out and that he would be happy.
Madam Chair, where is that on the A8?
On the A8, it's on page 2, lines 13 and 14. And the reason is that apparently there's only one tester that has that scholarship. So we took that out.
It's a sole source issue.
Right.
Okay, thank you.
Right. So that's why we removed that. And the A12s have a fiscal, I would imagine they would have some kind of a fiscal with them.
Chair Walker, the A12s paid for the reimbursement to the school districts out of the state school fund as well. And in this case, the department's allowed to expend up to $250,000 per fiscal year. And it's also from the Education Service District portion. So it would be a similar fiscal, mm-hmm. I guess, to the A8s and the A11s. Mm-hmm. And that's coming from the state school fund. It's not new money.
It's not new money.
Right.
Okay. It's the same. Okay. Unless someone has a burning desire to have some conversation about the 12s, I'd like to do the 11.
I don't, Madam Chair.
Okay. Then, Senator Cruz.
Madam Chair, I move the dash A11 amendment to House Bill 2263A.
Senator Cruz moves the dash A11 amendment, the dash 11 amendment to House Bill 2263A. Any discussion? Sorry.
This is not a sole source amendment.
Correct.
Thank you.
Correct. Okay. No discussion, so order.
Madam Chair, I move the dash A13 amendment to House Bill 2263A.
Okay, Senator Cruz moves the dash A13 amendment to House Bill 2263A. Ms. Hunt, you explain those?
Chair Walker, yes, I can. The A13 amendments are an add-on to the bill, so they don't affect the other amendments you've adopted or what's in the bill. The subject of the A13 amendments are the School for the Blind and the School for the Deaf and the authority of the State Board of Education, the Superintendent of Public Instruction, and the Department of Education relating to those schools. Currently, what the amendments do is amend the main statute that deals with the authority of the superintendent to cite the schools, to move the schools, and it also affects the department's ability to sell the property that where the schools are located. Right now, the superintendent, according to the statute that you see before you in the amendments, has the ability to cite the schools anywhere that she wants as long as it's in Marion County. So I understand there was an issue that came up in another committee in the building about the School for the Blind being moved, for example, to the School for the Deaf location. Mm-hmm. Under current authority, the superintendent could do that. Under this amendment, the superintendent does not have that authority. She would make recommendations about where the facilities are located to the Legislative Assembly. The recommendations would include things such as the location of the schools, the sale or transfer of property that serves as the school for the blind, the school for the deaf, and other matters relating to these schools. And I think that's it, unless there's questions.
Anyone have a question of Ms. Hunt?
Interesting amendment.
Where did these amendments come from?
They're mine, Senator Westland.
I had that feeling.
Senator Morrison, Senator Morrison and I we serve on the Ed Subcommittee together in Ways and Means, and we learned last week that the superintendent has this authority without approval from the legislature, and I couldn't make any changes to a budget note, a simple budget note, which, as it turns out, has no legislative authority anyway, but I wasn't allowed to make any change to the budget note. So you know what? we can make change to policy. And that actually has more clout than a budget note. So that's why we have the A13. Let me just say that the schools for the deaf and the school for the blind have been a part of the state's history since the 1800s, and it's been under different control during that period of time, and was turned over to the Department of Education, I believe, in 1971. Ms. Hunt, does that sound about right? That file's in another cabinet upstairs, but that's about right. It was in the 70s. And I just think that this is a discussion that the Legislative Assembly needs to have, that it shouldn't rest solely with the Superintendent of Public Instruction, and that she can certainly make recommendations, but I do believe it's our responsibility to deal with this matter.
Madam Chair, it's not like I think we're putting a decision off for another 2 years. This could certainly be an issue to be for the Assembly to bring up in February. So.
Well, that would have been my guess anyway with this budget note, and then we wouldn't have had anything to say about it. And as I learned in my discussion with Ms. Hunt on Friday, the department could also just move out of the site, and then it would become abandoned property or vacant property, and DAS could have sold it without our permission. Correct, Ms. Hunt?
Chair Walker, members of the committee, yes. If, for example, right now the superintendent could move the children who are at the School for the Blind over to another facility, leaving the property vacant. And there is a statute that clearly says the department can transfer this property, sell it, this kind of thing relating to these facilities. But there's also a statute that talks about DAS taking the property and then treating it as surplus property, and then they could locate another agency, they could sell it, this kind of thing. It's a little ambiguous about whether DAS would do it or the Department of Ed. The other thing, upon looking at this issue, I think late Friday, that figures into this is the Department of Ed for the last, well, this biennium and certainly next biennium, has a expenditure limitation on monies they can expend from the School for the Blind, and it's $3 million roughly. The estimate, I think, for the property is about $9 million, so clearly they couldn't spend the money from it. So they could sell it, maybe, but they couldn't spend it. So they do have those limitations currently built into their budget and then also the statutes.
Also, Ms. Hunt, isn't it true that in statute we don't really have anything yet that says that if the school, either of the schools, is closed and sold and they co-locate, there's no provision in statute that the money follows the student? Correct?
Senator Walker, that's correct. There is not anything that says that once they sell the facility at the School for the Blind that money needs to necessarily be used for the kids at the School for the Blind. There would need to be some additional statutory direction for that.
Which is another reason why we need to have the legislature involved in that decision. Great.
Madam Chair,
mm-hmm.
I understand at least what I believe you're trying to get to here is that to a point where ultimately the legislature has some say in not only the location, but the provisioning of funds for students from the School for the Blind, because that seems to be the one school that is under the most conversation, if you will. But if I understand Ms. Hunt correctly, the superintendent currently has the administrative ability to move the school someplace within Marion County. But that would obviously require funding, of which the superintendent does not have expenditure authority. So she would ultimately, in this case, she would ultimately have to come back for approval to the legislative body.
Chair Walker, Senator Westlin. Yeah, there's an expenditure limitation of $3 million and then some on the department relating to the School for the Blind, School for the Deaf combined. And then there's also, of course, an appropriation to the department for them. So unless they could move the school within that expenditure limitation or within that appropriation, then they would need additional monies or additional authority from the legislature.
But is that $3 million above and beyond their operations?
Chair Walker, Senator Westland, no, I don't believe it is.
So that $3 million is functionally to run the schools?
Correct.
So to do any moving, they would, the Department of Education would have to come back for expenditure authority or, ergo, permission.
Right. Chair Walker, Senator Westland, presumably they could also come before, of course, the emergency board to get their expenditure limitation adjusted. But, yes, presumably they'd need to come back to the legislature to get that adjusted.
And that's my concern, Senator Westland, is they could do it in front of the emergency board instead of the legislative assembly.
Good point. I agree with you.
Yeah, you bet. Senator Morris.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Cindy, are there any provisions of this amendment that would foreclose any alternatives that could be considered by the department?
Chair Walker, Senator Morris, not that I know of. I mean, the ones that I'm aware of, for example, the budget note that I know that's being considered in Ways and Means, the budget note would still be, it'd be still consistent with what's in this amendment, in that they're, I think, under the budget note directed to come back to the legislature with their plans and so forth for the sale. So that's very consistent with this amendment. So their plans to, for example, sell for the school for the blind, they could recommend that under this. They could recommend keeping the kids there, you know, and bring that back. So all of those options that I'm aware of, you know, this amendment would allow for, although, you know, I am not privy to all of their conversations that they've been having. So there could be some options I'm not aware of.
Thank you. Madam Chair, this is an appropriate amendment.
Thank you. I thought so, too.
Madam Chair. And I agree. E-Board does have its purposes, but something of this scope and complexity, I think, needs to be fully vetted. And I think we afford that opportunity before a substantive committee more so than we do before an E-Board subcommittee. So I also agree this is an appropriate amendment.
And I think they have the ability to continue going out and doing what they're doing right now. It's just simply that the legislature needs to have the final say, and statute trumps budget note. Okay. All right, any other questions? Are you okay with this?
I have another question.
Okay. Great.
So the motion on the floor is
To adopt the dash 13s. There's one objection. Are there any others? Let's take the roll on the 13s.
Senator Metzger?
Aye.
Senator Moore?
Aye.
Senator Westland?
No.
Vice Chair Cruz?
Aye.
Chair Walker?
Aye. Happy aye. They're adopted.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2263A as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves House Bill 2263A as amended to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation. We're trying this once again. Any other questions, Senator Metzger?
I'll be voting no, as I did before, for the previous reasons, not the new reasons. So.
All right. Okay, any other questions? Senator Westland, are you going to be a no on the main bill now? Okay. All right, then let's take the roll, Ms. Gravel.
Senator Metzger?
No.
Aye.
Senator Metzger?
Aye.
Vice Chair Cruz?
Aye.
Chair Walker?
Aye. House Bill 2263A is once again on its way to the floor. Senator Cruz? Do you still want to carry this copy?
This is going to be a trip through paradise. Yeah.
This is substance over form, right, Senator Cruz?
we hope so, yes.
All right. Thank you very much. We will close the work session on House Bill 2263. It brought joy to my heart.
Say it's your birthday.
She just walked in. So we will open a public hearing on House Bill 3556.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3556 creates a task force on food safety. It requires a task force report, which may include legislative recommendations, to a legislative interim agriculture or health-related committee by February 3rd, 2008. It sunsets the task force upon the opening of the next regular biennial legislative session. declares an emergency would take effect upon passage, and has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Okie dokie. Mm. Welcome, Representative Smith.
Well, thank you, Chair Walker, and thank you, committee members. Thank you for hearing this bill. I'm Patty Smith, State Representative for District 52, East Multnomah, East Clackamas, and Hood River County, and I always say those because they're three very important counties that Senator Metzger and I represent. I'm here today to ask for your support in passing House Bill 3556, a much-needed task force dealing with our food safety program here in Oregon. This is important to all Oregonians, especially to consumers, since the papers recently have been filled with numerous reports about the pet food recall and now the possibility that the contamination may have spread. I used a priority bill to do House Bill 3556, and I want to tell you a little bit about it. It's a baby task force. It's very small, I can't believe it has a referral to Ways and Means, but I guess it does. I've tried very hard to get that lifted, but I'll leave that up to the chair and the committee members to make that decision. Three members are appointed by the Department of Ag, and one shall be a representative of the State Department of Ag, one shall be a representative of food manufacturers, and one food distributors, and one member of the legislature and the state veterinarian. So, and to report back at February of next year, since we're coming back into session. So I wanted to keep this small. I wanted to keep this defined as to what we're looking at, and we think three or four meetings should do it. And I think that's, you know, we need to focus our food safety efforts and what we need to do here in Oregon. So I think that's why I brought that bill. I know that's why I brought that bill. I have pets, and I've worked on ag and natural resource ever since I've been in the legislature. And the one thing we have done, we have a very good partnership with the Department of Ag and the USDA and the federal FDA, but, you know, here in Oregon, we're faced with a global economy. We have many, many things coming into this community, into this state that we didn't have before. And I think we need to take a look at to make sure to see if there's any recommendations that we need to make that Oregon needs to step up and do. So I'd be glad to answer any questions, and I've included the articles, which I'm sure you've all heard about and read about, but it just continues, and I think it's something important as policymakers we need to do.
Well, it continues because China doesn't seem to have any concern about the environmental community in their state. Their food supply has been continually tainted. They've had babies die from things put in the formula, and now I believe that toothpaste is being recalled from, that's been sent to Taiwan and elsewhere, that's had some sort of horrible thing put in it. So I just say until China figures out they need to be concerned about food safety, we just ban all food imports from China at this point. But that's probably not going to happen.
That's probably not going to happen. That's probably very complicated.
It is very complicated. But, you know, it was interesting because there was an article in the Sunday newspaper of the Oregonian, tainted products put food safety focus on China.
Yes.
And there's smuggled meat. You know, dead animals, dead children, there's big problems, and if we're not addressing it, I don't know what's going to happen to the American people. Let me ask you this, Ms. Representative Smith. I was sort of struck by, you'll see my yellow highlight on your bill here.
Oh, okay.
I yellow highlighted the part that says one member appointed by the Speaker of the House of Representatives in consultation with the President of the Senate from among members of the House of Representatives. I thought that was a little odd. I've never seen you all in that chamber come forward with a bill that says only you all get to be appointed to a task force. So why is it that we're not having a member of the Senate on the task force?
I think we did that. The Legislative Council wrote it that way, and because of the time limit, we went ahead with it. But I certainly would be open to a member of the Senate being appointed, too. So I'm trying to keep it small.
I know you are, but there's two chambers here.
Yeah, absolutely.
That would be quite extraordinary to have only one chamber represented, provided the committee likes the idea of another task force. Unfortunately for you, you come after a long trail of task forces, so let me open it up to the committee for some discussion and see what they all think. Senator Westland?
Well, I think this is a very good bill, Madam Chair, and just to add a little levity to it, I'd be a no if we were going to appoint another Senate member to another task force, so I'm totally supportive of your House exclusivity there.
Well, I think it serves a good purpose, and your point is well taken, Senator Walker, but then again, your point is well taken too, Senator Westland. I'm not so sure. But I think the task force itself is important, so I'll go either way on that one. We do meet on Thursday, right?
We do.
So, you know, if you want to make it one from the House, one from the Senate, that's fine. Definitely. See, we have a fiscal statement on this bill. Says there's minimal fiscal impact. There's no reason this bill should go to Ways and Means. It doesn't survive. If it does, the bill says specifically people don't receive compensation at all, but two people are already employees of the state. So definitely don't want to send this. There's no reason from fiscal standpoint either to send this to Ways and Means. But I do think we should go forward, and on the idea of the House, the Senate, at this stage of the game, I go either way, whatever you'd like to do.
Okay. Well, what I want to hear from Senator Morse, Senator Cruz, but what I'd like to do is get that amendment to add a Senate member.
Sure.
And that gives me some time to check the Senate President's office as to why this thing's got a fiscal, which this is the least fiscally impacted task force I've seen all session. So, and I think I had read somewhere on there that the department could absorb, the Department of Agriculture is charged with staffing the task force, and they're here, so we'll ask them that question.
Yep. That's great. I think they answered that question on the House side, and there wasn't any fiscal impact.
Yeah, because Senator Metzger's right. If your bill goes to Ways and Means, you won't see it again.
I know. That's why I'm trying to
get it. It's very, very difficult to get policy bills heard in Ways and Means. Senator Morse, do you have any questions at this point?
Well, I would prefer to have a member, thank you, Madam Chair, a member of the Senate as well. I think it keeps both bodies better engaged in the process and the outcomes.
If you can find one willing to do it.
I Senator Morris is just volunteering.
I think Senator Walker. It's her birthday present.
But this raises an issue that I think is much bigger in terms of our processes within the Assembly, in terms of how we address specific problems that need to be researched, and with the potential of bringing back legislation or whatever findings to a future Assembly. And the I think if we begin to activate our interim committees in a more disciplined way, I guess, and a purposed way and timely way, these kinds of things can be assigned to a committee by our leadership, and without the necessity of going through this process and task force. So the issue here is of critical importance, and I can understand that. I'll be supporting the bill, but I would prefer that we emerge from this session thinking critically about how our legislative processes work, in follow-up of the Public Commission on the Legislature and some of those ideas, reforms that make it a little different process than just task force after task force.
Yes, Senator Morse, I agree with you, and I think that's, and I'll hear from Senator Metzger, that's why this experiment with this annual session is going to be a really good example of that, because I'm anticipating that our interim committees this time will be pretty aggressive with a pretty strong agenda, because we're coming back in February. That's not all that far away when you take out November and December for those two back-to-back holidays in the summer, we're going to need to sort of regroup. So I do think if this works out and Oregonians like it, this is what they'll see, is fewer of these task forces and more of this open meeting stuff. Senator Metzger?
I'm just going to validate that point of view from mine and what Senator Morris said. I think one thing, you know, interesting about this bill that Representative Smith has is that the report is due February 3rd, 2008, so it's destined to have a report in time for the February interim, and which I think is, or the February mini session, which I think is good. And truly, if we adopt this this mini session idea, then I think it does give us reason to look at all the different issues that need further look. And rather than having a bunch of bills with a bunch of task forces, we can make it a sense of the legislature for that interim between June and February to do a lot of these things as part of our interim committee work. And I do appreciate the timeline, because what it really tells us is that this is designed to bring something to the legislature quickly. If we need to consider it, that we'll have something on our plate with some research that has been done. So. And I'll certainly support your Senate member.
Okay. Thank you, Senator.
Yeah, thank you. And I'm going to support your desire for an amendment, because it is your birthday. And it does make sense. But I agree with what Senators Metzger and Morris have said. And quite honestly, I think one of the reasons we have done task force over time is because we get to the end of session, we have sine die, and we all disappear for 6 months. And at some point in time out in the future, we reconfigure committees and give them minimal committee staff and expect them to actually accomplish something. So the key components in this, in my opinion, is keeping committees intact going into the interim, and also making sure that we have money in the budget so that we can keep the committee staffed at an appropriate level so they can be fully functioning. And when I have been asked by members of the Senate about the concept of us getting a pay raise, I said what's more important for me would be to make sure that our committees are staffed appropriately and that our offices are staffed appropriately first before we even consider more money for ourselves. For us to become fully functional an equal part of government, I think this is vitally important. So I look forward to the day when we have structure in place to where a lot of this task force work is just assigned to committees as the appropriate venue to be having the discussions.
Okay, great. Well, it looks like you're getting some support here. So we'll hear from the Department of Agriculture. And
thank you, Chair.
You all have... Ms. Richardson, have that amendment drafted to just add one of the members of the Senate.
Great. And I purposely, and Senator Walker, just so you know, I purposely put this a short timeline so we could do exactly what your committee members have said. We can focus on this issue and bring it back next February rather than an interim committee that doesn't meet, you know.
Well, you know, Representative Smith, I think that's important, because this article here says just last month, this is from the Washington Post, there were 107 food imports from China that the FDA detained at U.S. ports, dried apples preserved with a cancer-causing chemical, frozen catfish laden with banned antibiotics, scallops and sardines coated with putrefying bacteria, mushrooms laced with illegal pesticides, and prunes tinted with chemical dyes not approved for human consumption, frozen breaded shrimp preserved with nitrofurin, an antibacterial that can cause cancer, and swordfish rejected as poisonous. I mean, come on.
Madam Chair, and that's just what they inspected.
That's
when you consider the small percent that actually gets inspected,
it's like
it makes one wonder.
You're right. And also the article indicated that they'll come back two or three times trying to pass this stuff through. And so now the government, the United States, is in trade talks with China at the moment. And with all of this, I think Congress is demanding some accountability, finally.
I think so, too.
So let's see what we can do here in Oregon.
All right.
All right. Thank you, Representative
thank
Smith.
Thank you very
much. Let me hear from Lauren Henderson.
Good morning. Lauren Henderson, Assistant Director with the Department of Agriculture. As Representative Smith has said, certainly the recent headlines regarding E. coli, the melamine issue, have brought food safety to, I think, all of our attention and focus. I will make a comment that I think food safety is certainly the responsibility of all of us from the farm to the fork. Certainly one of the things that our 33 field inspectors deal with on a regular basis is the proper handling and preparation of food as well. This task force, I think, could assist our agency in exploring a number of ways to optimize our food safety programs. I think it's an opportunity also to put a positive spin on this, to highlight the wonderful food that is produced and distributed in Oregon worldwide. Oregon has some of the finest and most high-quality food around. And certainly when we get issues coming from other countries, other places, I think that's an opportunity for Oregon to step up and say, here's what Oregon has and the quality of the food that we have here in Oregon. We do work, our food safety division does work with FDA and USDA in a partnership. We do food inspections for them, primarily based around distribution processing, as well as USDA for meat products as well. And with that, I'll just... I do have our food safety administrator here if you have any particular questions about that. As far as the fiscal, I think the fiscal that we submitted, our agency did have minimal fiscal associated with it. Our current resources do not contemplate this task force. And with the short timeline, we're going to have to probably dedicate some staff from our food safety area from doing normal work to get this report on the recommendations by that deadline. But we'll do the best we can with that.
By minimal fiscal, can you elaborate?
I think it was under $50,000, I believe.
Okay. That's generally what triggers something not to go to Ways and Means.
Yeah.
Okay. Senator Cruz?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm looking at this task force, and we're looking at food inspection. I know there's another branch of food inspection inside the health department. I'm wondering if it would be appropriate to have somebody from public health also be on this task force, because clearly, we've had conversations over time as to whether we should be doing a more collaborative job of inspection. And I know, you know, they do restaurants and you do like my fruit stand, you know, things like that. So I'm just wondering if we're looking comprehensively, if it would be appropriate to include a member from public health into this task force.
Chair Walker, Senator Cruz, we don't have any issues with that. We work with the health division pretty closely with our food safety division already.
Does anyone have a comment?
Well, just to comment on that, I mean, the bill does say, too, that that they can utilize others who are not members of the task force in their duties, so they can certainly invite someone from public health without necessarily having to put an amendment in it.
Chair Walker and Senator Metzger, that's correct. I think Section 13 requires all state agencies to participate where they can, so...
Okay, I guess I'll be satisfied, Madam Chair, with just for the record that they need to be included.
Okay. All right. Any other questions? Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Henderson. I appreciate it. We will hold this bill over till Thursday and get that amendment, and I'll also work hard on getting that fiscal referral removed. So we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3556. Tell me we're done. I think we're done. Geez, you guys have a whole hour. So,
well, let's go ahead and do 339 now.
Now they send everybody away.
Now that they're all gone, we can punch that baby out.
All right. Well, thank you, gentlemen, for your participation today. Enjoy your day. It's going to get hot as the week wears on.
This task force.
We're adjourned. Mm-hmm.